Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I'm Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, I'm joined by Guy Farah-Fisher. Guy is a Salesforce certified technical architect and a senior manager from a large Salesforce partner in the UK. Through the episode, Guy tells us more about his education and what really interested him about a career in IT. We then find out how he entered the world of Salesforce and the roles that he's played over the years, from starting as an administrator, then moving into development, architecture, and ultimately becoming a CTA. We hear more about how Guy chose between different companies and what he looked for in different companies when he was moving between jobs in his earlier career as he was working towards his goal of becoming an architect and a CTA. We look at the topic or the comment that people make about thinking like an architect, and we focus in on how Guy learned to do that and what that means to him. We then look at his CTA journey, how he started seriously preparing for it, and what the gaps were that he had to fill in order to become a CTA. We then look at the perception of years of experience being a good measurement of seniority, which Guy definitely dispels. And we focus in on some of those perceptions and potentially stereotypes that people make regarding years of experience. And yeah, it's a really interesting insight to get Guy's view on that. We then look at what has changed since he's become a CTA, his goals for the future, and what he is most excited about regarding the Salesforce platform moving forward. So Guy is a really, really inspirational person, someone I think you'll get a lot from listening to. I really, really hope you enjoy the episode. I really enjoyed speaking with Guy and hearing more about his journey, and I'm really excited to see what the future holds for him. If you do enjoy the episode, please do subscribe for future episodes that are coming through. But Guy, thank you so much for joining us on a lovely Sunday evening from the UK.
Yeah, no, it's good to be here. This is what I like to do on my Sunday night.
I believe you. But I've got so much I'm keen to run through today. I'm really, really keen to share your story. So I always like to start at the beginning, and that means before Salesforce. And what did you, going through education and going through school and college, what was it that you wanted to do? What were you passionate about?
I mean, for me, originally, funnily enough, I wanted to be a chemistry teacher. That was like my first, when I started to think about what I was going to do in the long term, that was the first thought I had. I enjoyed chemistry and I thought I'd be a good teacher, and it kind of seemed to fit, and I thought I'd enjoy the environment of a school and everything like that. I think I then continued to study like chemistry as well as like computer science, and I essentially just fell out of love with chemistry over time. And almost fell into love of the kind of computer science, which has always interested me. But I think what really captivated my attention with it was my kind of final project was I had to work with like a real life client, or what I kind of had to get as a real life client. And I worked with someone I knew that was an accounting consultant, essentially. And I had to actually, you know, gather requirements and build solution for them. You know, create all the documents that would then go with it as if it was going to be sold as a, you know, piece of software. Essentially, I built a Salesforce super light, which I didn't know Salesforce at the time, and it was a CRM for managing all their accounts, opportunities, and you know, different currencies and everything like that. But I even had the Salesforce Blue, which I didn't know Salesforce at the time, but I kind of was like appealed to this baby blue, which I thought was kind of funny later on, but. That really, I guess, caught my attention. I was like, yeah, this is what I want to do. I want to find out what job that I can do where I basically, you know, do this for a living.
Sure. So how did you then find Salesforce? Because I've said to you previously, like we find that a lot of people that we deal with fall into the Salesforce market, in that the company they work for might implement Salesforce, or you know, they've been a Siebel consultant or developer for years and then find their way, oh, there's this new thing called Salesforce I need to get myself into. But you actually identified Salesforce as the platform you wanted to work with after doing that. So how did that happen?
Yeah, ish. Identified so much as I knew that was the type of technology. I think I was lucky enough that I'd met someone that was working as a Salesforce developer at the time. And they were like, you know, this is the type of thing that I kind of do. Why don't you check out Salesforce? And basically gave me a push in that direction. And I kind of consumed all the information I could about the platform. And I instantly decided that that's kind of where I was going to go. There was no real decision-making process where I evaluate any other platforms, really. It was, you know, there's a lot of material for this software online, and I can basically just learn as much as I can by myself, and that's what I did. So it was literally just about going through, I mean, back in those days, it was like the workbooks. It wasn't Trailhead, but it was just documentation, implementation guides, and those types of things. Immediately kind of studying for, well, you know, against study guides for the certs and so on, which I wouldn't go on to take for a bit later. But it was just consuming as much as I possibly could and applying, I guess, the programming principles that I kind of learned in my studies to then use that within Salesforce, really.
Sure. Having finished your studies, how did you then go about finding your first Salesforce role? And how much platform knowledge did you have at that point from doing this studying?
The platform knowledge was interesting because I think, obviously, I look back now and I think I'd only just scratched the surface of, you know, the platform and the wider Salesforce ecosystem. I think I focused more on the declarative tools and how I can, you know, build out Salesforce with, you know, configuration, because that was the whole principle of the platform, right? It was how can, you know, non-technical people almost enhance it at the first stage. And that's what I was really trying to do to get in the door. So although, like, I'd come from a development angle and was also, you know, running with that, my main focus was understanding the declarative side. And I was, you know, would speak to various recruiters as I kind of start to build a bit of experience, and ended up working with this kind of startup ISV that was putting together various like products on the Salesforce platform, and joined really as well to kind of manage their internal Salesforce org as a administrator, but then to try and get involved in the development kind of where I could across their products, and obviously that was where I was trying to go into, and it was the time where Lightning was starting to come into play. So I think I was lucky enough to try and explore that avenue for the business. So they kind of saw me to, okay, why don't you have a look at what we can do on Lightning and how we can start to leverage that within everything that we build and how we operate. So that was, again, another round of me trying to kind of get all the information I could about that and, you know, aligning it with the business, and then also just keeping the lights running with the kind of day-to-day administration as well.
Sure. How did you go from being an admin to then get, because you wanted to be a developer, right? That's what you had studied. That's what you were passionate about. So how did you make that switch?
Because I was doing some development at this startup, and I was always progressing it in my own time as well, because like you said, it was the avenue I wanted to go down. I just knew that I wanted to spend my days as a developer at that point. I then moved to a marketing agency that were essentially an end client who had Salesforce. And again, I was focusing on the BAU, keeping the lights running administration that we were going on. But as I guess we spent more time with them, started to focus on how I could improve what they're actually working with the platform. So less of, you know, how do we change this data or access this data, run these reports, edit these fields, and configurable automation, everything like that that they had going on. It was, how can we use the customization and development tools to really progress what we're working with. And we kind of expanded the Salesforce team, where there was a two of us, and then we ended up bringing on a couple of Salesforce administrators, and their main focus was essentially the day-to-day administration tasks. And I moved completely into development and kind of continual improvement within the business. And that's kind of where the big switch came for me, where it was focusing on the development tasks and how we can really use the platform and all the tools that come with it past what you can do with point and click.
Sure. And would you say that everything that you've worked with in Salesforce has come quite naturally to you? And especially at the early days, like, were there things that you just couldn't get your head around?
Yeah, I mean, I remember right at the beginning going through the Salesforce workbooks. And for anyone that kind of remembers those, it was literally a step-by-step guide to building the apps in it. And it was far less interactive than today. And it wasn't, you know, didn't have questions, no hands-on tests or anything like that. It was a go to setup, click this, click that. And I think I was going through the motions of it, but I think I was waited. There was a certain day where it just kind of clicked around how it stuck together. But I think at first it was a difficult concept to almost wrap my head around. And I think it just took time to get an understanding of the platform and how you could kind of really use it. And once that twigged you know, gone in my head, then I think just started to progress faster and faster with the learnings. But yeah, it definitely didn't come easy at first. I think that was hours and hours behind a computer going through those like workbooks and playing around in different development orgs.
Sure. And at that point, was it evident to you about the opportunity to really grow a career in the Salesforce ecosystem and really achieve a lot over the coming years?
Yeah, I mean, once I guess got into the ecosystem, and then I remember how I went to London World Tour. For me, that was the real eye opener. Like kind of walking up the steps at the XL and just seeing the scale of what it was just in London as well, right? And that was a 1 day free event, and at the time I couldn't even begin to perceive what, you know, Dreamforce would be like as a massive occasion. But I think that really opened my eyes when I saw all the different partners, you know, obviously thousands of customers, just big huge spaces filled with loads of people all talking about Salesforce. And that really put it in perspective that this wasn't, you know, just the system that the 100 person company that I was working with was using. This was, you know, a global business and a global ecosystem that had just a lot of opportunities within it.
Sure. So at that point, you realized that the tool you'd built for the accounting firm probably didn't have legs.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, I think it's been done. Yeah. I think I'm trying to invent the wheel here.
Yeah, yeah. So how have you, moving between companies, you've moved a few times, but always progressed. Yeah. And always, you know, you've obviously achieved a lot from having moved between different companies. So how have you identified the right opportunities for you to progress and not just taken roles that have potentially been a sideways move?
Yeah, for me, it's always been a massive thing when I've been considering a move is the type of business and the type of role I'm moving into. Because I think I never wanted to snatch at an opportunity or seek out, you know, particular salary or anything like that. It was all about what I was looking for at the time. And when I first moved, I really wanted to have ownership of a kind of Salesforce org. And I really wanted to be able to just work to actually deliver some value to a business. And that was what I was searching for. So it wasn't just anyone who kind of came knocking. I remember when I moved to Acumen Solutions from the marketing agency I was working with. And that was my first step into consultancy. And I knew that I wanted to go into consultancy at that point because for me, that was where a lot of the, if not all of the kind of large implementations of Salesforce were happening. And I knew I'd be in a team of Salesforce professionals where I was, you know, at where I was the Salesforce expert, right? And I wanted to go to somewhere that I really wasn't. And I had a lot to learn from those I was working with and those that I could basically seek support from. And, you know, work on various different projects and different industries and all that kind of good stuff. So that was really crucial for me. So I was quite against, you know, going to another end client, even if it was a bigger team, even if there was a lot of opportunity there. It was, you know, I want to experience all that a consultancy has to offer.
Sure.
And I think I've always just focused on what am I trying to get out of the next move and what skills have I, guess, acquired, you know, at where I currently am that allow me to take that next step. So it's always been about, like I said, you know, what the business is going to offer me and the role that I can do.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. So started off admin, then developer, and then obviously you've progressed to an architect. And we hear this term or saying, thinking like an architect, or they don't think like an architect, or they do think like an architect. So how did you learn to think like an architect?
I think it was a lot of working with those that had been working with the platform, but also in architecture for a while, and trying to understand a lot of the core principles that govern architecture. I think in a weird way, once you get a grasp on it, there's almost like a feeling that you get that a solution is architecturally sound or not. And I think that obviously comes from experience with designing these solutions and understanding what's going to work well. But there's also just gathering the knowledge of principles from also outside of the Salesforce ecosystem, more kind of general enterprise architect. And like I said, working really closely with talented architects that I was lucky to do, to pick up on all the various different concepts that kind of go with it. And a lot of self-study as well that went into that. And then, like I said, I think it just culminated in a bit of almost a feeling, like I said, that you get as you work through those architectural problems that I think you can sometimes see. And I sometimes get it when I work through an interview candidates as well, that they have put together the solution where they understand each of the technical components within it, but it almost just doesn't fit together in an optimal way. And I think that's the thinking like an architect piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. This episode of Talent Hub Talk is sponsored by our friends from Flow Republic. Flow Republic is a Salesforce architect academy that works with individuals and businesses to upskill and prepare Salesforce architects for the CTA review board. They also have a number of other offerings, including coaching and guiding on areas such as soft skills, consulting, and design training. Flow Republic are some of the brightest minds in the Salesforce ecosystem and have a proven track record of developing Salesforce professionals and helping architects to reach their goal of becoming a CTA. To find out more about the value they can add, please check out flowrepublic.com. So at what point through your journey over the last number of years did the CTA become a real goal for you?
I think as soon as I heard about the CTA, this is probably 2015, I was kind of first getting into Salesforce. That's when I was beginning to understand what it was. And I remember someone kind of explaining it to me that there was a panel of other CTAs and they would review your solution and question you and decide whether you should kind of enter into this group as well. And I was always a big fan of certifications just because of the fact that I think they give you something to aim for and a bit of a path to follow in your learning, which I think was always helpful for me anyway. And I think as soon as I'd heard about it, I just was like, well, I've got to do that. There wasn't really an option. It was like, at some point I'm going to have to do that exam because I just did. I think I said, yeah, it kind of became my Everest. Like it was a thing that I just had to work towards. And until it was done, I would just continue working towards it.
Did you set a timeline on from the moment you found it to when you hoped to achieve it? Like, was it something you expected to achieve by now?
Not at all. I mean, I thought it was 10 years off. I kind of didn't have that in my mind at all. And I remember it was only when I was at Acumen and I was speaking to one of the TAs there, and he kind of said to me, you know, like, this is something that you could achieve relatively quickly. I mean, he said, you know, if you did nothing else, you could kind of do it in the next couple of years. Ended up being 3 years ago, so he was a bit off. But I think that was the first time that I started to think about it as a near-term goal. So before that, it was always, you know, I'll kind of cross that bridge when I get closer to it. And I think at that point, I then started to think about how I would get there. And I was working through the prerequisites needed to sit the board anyway, but it definitely brought it forward. But I know before that I didn't have a goal around when I would achieve it.
Sure. So then when you decided, actually, you know, this is something I can achieve, where did you identify your gaps? And I guess broader than just Salesforce, because at that point, that's the platform you'd kind of specialized in and spent, I guess, 90% of your time or more working on.
Yeah, I think it's a good point around the fact that obviously a lot of my experience was on the Salesforce platform. So there was an element of understanding more of the core architectural principles that just govern enterprise architecture more broadly. So that definitely came into it. And essentially, I was lucky enough to have a pretty good mentor at Acumen. I basically went in for my first kind of mock review board and just got ripped to shreds. And I think it kind of just, you know, gave me a list of all these areas that I just needed to work on. And I think it was the best thing to identify those topics. And obviously I knew that I wasn't an expert in everything and I was still learning across the board. But I think it really zeroed in on, you know, these are the topics that you just need to have down, because they're going to come up every time, not just in the exam, but just in kind of general architecture and in life. So that kind of gave me my initial list of items that I just needed to crack on with and really understood and master.
Sure. So then what was the journey like in terms of preparing? Because Acumen to another business, was that a strategic move or was that just timing?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I was with Acumen and I was doing TA roles and I was learning a lot and progressing well. And I think for me, the big move, and when I moved to PwC, it was about the scale really of everything. It was the fact that I hadn't worked for a business that had, you know, a couple of 100,000 employees, but also within the Salesforce practice, particularly in the UK, was a bigger business. They were working with big clients and I knew they had big programs going on. So it was around how can I kind of increase the scale and increase the complexity to really kind of push to the next level. but also just pick up on more of the general consulting skills that a business like PwC is obviously known for, where they've got a strong heritage in just general business and management consulting, as opposed to Acumen, that was very much a technology consulting business, albeit really strong in that area. And that's kind of how I started to move, or that's what started to make me want to move into that space. But to be honest, when I was first moving to PwC and going through that process, it wasn't necessarily something that I was 100% adamant of that I was going to do. It was just exploring the opportunities there. And I met with the partner that led the practice, and he basically just completely convinced me on it. And, we spoke, and he's a really smart guy. And we, I think, connected on a lot of ideas around how certain businesses are not doing it quite right, and how, you can really operate an effective kind of practice within the Salesforce space. And that's what drew me to PwC, really.
Sure. So then obviously you get to the review board. Here it finally arrives after kind of five or so years of thinking about it. Did you leave that day thinking you'd passed?
I did, in a tricky way that you don't want to tell anyone that you think you've passed, because it's just never a good omen. But I did at that moment. When I finished the presentation and went into the Q&A, I thought I'd done enough to pass from the presentation piece. The Q&A is obviously tricky, because that's when they go through the whole solution and critique any areas, after which I felt okay about it, and I thought it could kind of go either way. As time kind of went on before I got the result, basically every day after the review board, I was more and more confident that I'd failed. And I think a few days later, I was like, I definitely failed, because there's no scenario which I passed, like I definitely failed. And then I kind of got the email saying that I passed, and I was like, oh, well, yeah, I knew all along.
So do you come out of the review board, and because you were working with Doiner, right?
Yeah.
So do you come out and then immediately jump on a call with someone and say, well, this was the requirement, this is how I solutioned it, like, what do you think? Is that how it kind of works?
No, I I spoke to, Doiner and Seb obviously wished me luck before going into the review board, and Seb kind of gave me a call that evening. We spoke about how it went and what went well and what didn't go well, and his kind of guidance was, look, like, you can't do anything about it now, you just got to wait for the results. But as soon as they then came through, I straight away messaged Doiner and Seb, and I think Seb jumped to the phone and called me straight away, but it was quite late as well, so I'm not sure his other half was pleased. But the we then kind of just spoke that through, and we'll see how happy we both were. And yeah, Joanna, said congratulations and all that kind of stuff. But I've already thanked her. I think she knows, obviously, I appreciated all the work that she put in to kind of get me to the review board.
Sure. So what's changed since you've passed?
Weirdly, not a lot. I mean, it's not been too long. I've had a lot of sessions, with people going through the process to give them a sense of what it's like, and particularly the actual review board itself, and give them an idea around the setup, because now they're doing it all virtually. I think it's a new concept that people are getting used to, but not too much in my day-to-day role. I mean, over time, I'll be working a bit more to establish things like a CTA kind of enablement program within PwC. So that's something we're working through at the moment, but obviously just takes a bit of time to get to that position, and we've got a few people that are going through the boards at the moment, so we might have a nice little cohort of mentors that can guide the next cohort of basically candidates through the process. So that's kind of the next phase for me, is just supporting others in the way that I've been supported to get through that process.
Sure. And one thing that we both agree on, and we've spoken offline about, is the perception of years of experience and not being a good measurement of someone's capability. Have you kind of faced challenges with that over the years of people's perceptions of, how much experience someone needs to have to be effective or to be able to perform a certain role, or even stereotypes of people in certain roles and potentially you not fitting that stereotype?
Yeah, I mean, I think as with any industry, there's, some people have decades of experience and some people are kind of coming into the space. Obviously, Salesforce itself isn't, 100 years old. So there's a lot of people that have moved from other technologies into Salesforce as an ecosystem. But I've definitely seen that people tend to expect certain roles and things like, technical architect positions to be performed by, people with 20, 30 years of experience. And I think I've obviously don't look kind of 50. And I think that there's definitely been a, I'm not sure if it's a prejudice, but a perception that people have had when I've been working with them that I've not been doing the role that I've been actually brought in to do. And that's based on, you know, judgments that people make based, you know, on appearances and assuming that the guy who's clearly got more experience in industry is, you know, fulfilling that position where I've maybe come in to be that technical expert. So I think it's a challenging one because it's not always obvious, I guess, the knowledge that somebody has, but what can be obvious is how, you know, people look and whether they look to be older and look to have those years of experience.
Sure. So what do you think people should take from your achievement? Because like both people that are potentially looking to go through the similar journey or people that are in the industry and you know, might make perceptions or assumptions.
I would say that it's all about the quality of somebody's experience and I think some of the areas that they've worked in, because a lot of the time, you know, people have a huge amount of experience, which, you know, counts for a lot and, you know, can make somebody obviously very talented at what they do. But a lot of the time it's in, you know, the same stuff day to day, whereas, you know, other people might have less years of experience, but, you know, work twice as hard across various different areas and picked up a huge amount of skills and a huge amount of knowledge. So I think it's a challenging one because obviously often when people are going through CVs and putting out positions, there's an expectation about the amount of experience that they would require that role to have. But for me, I think there's sometimes people that can, not to say fast track that time, but just have, you know, had such good experience in various different areas that there allows them to have a similar amount of capability or knowledge in certain spaces. And I think in terms of, I guess, people learning from my experience on the CTA front, I think it's just that although it may seem much further down the line, there's obviously a lot that people can do to work towards it each day. Because that was my position, is that even though I perceived it to be years off initially, I was always studying and, like I said, doing the designer prerequisites and trying to amass that knowledge so that when I felt I was ready, I could kind of go straight into it. It just happened that I was kind of ready before I ever thought I was going to be.
That was a goal, right? And a massive goal, and you've ticked it off. And how do you now set another goal? Like, where do you go from being a CTA to achieving something else in the long time frame that you potentially have left as a career in architecture or whatever else you want to do?
Yeah, it's a good point because it is been the top of the pyramid for me for a while. And I never planned for what I would do after that. And I've always had something to work towards, whether that was, you know, the designer prerequisite that I needed to achieve or to conquer a particular topic that I could then take into the CTA review board. So for me, I think it's just going to be around still trying to gain as much knowledge as I can, both of, you know, the Salesforce platform and just, you know, wider architecture and development principles that kind of go along with that. And I think I appreciate that I've always got more to learn in every kind of capacity, and then just continue to work with clients to just deliver, I think, the best possible solutions and trying to actually, you know, just understand all the different applications and all the architectural areas that I've been working with.
Sure. And what are you most excited about in terms of not just your role, but the ongoing development and growth of the Salesforce platform and what's to come?
Yeah, I think, it's an interesting space to be in, and it always has been. And I think you can tell the shift in the way that Salesforce is thinking about themselves. And a lot of the time, previously, they were focused on how can we enable business users or admins to deliver the most amount of functionality. And while they think they're continuing to do that, they're also trying to develop how they can bring developers from other areas within software. So making their solution a bit more aligned to global standards. Lightning Web Components is an example, right? Moving away from Aura into Web Components, so it's easier for developers to kind of transition into that from other solutions. And similarly, I think with things like Salesforce Functions, which I think are going to be an interesting space around how businesses can use Salesforce, but also things like Heroku to kind of expand the use of the tool, really, in terms of, you know, elastic compute and, you know, scalable platform.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because the platform has just continued to grow, but every time I ask that question, there's still more to come.
Yeah,
it's not finished yet. There's still innovation and yeah, so much more to come.
Yeah, and obviously with things like DX coming out a while back and everything that's, I think, progressing in that space, for me, it's really interesting because it's the first time really that Salesforce is starting to align to what many other platforms are doing with things like DevOps. And I think it just makes it a more and more exciting place to be.
And just on that topic of bringing software engineers in from other spaces, like your passion was development. Do you still hold that passion? Like, do you still, at heart, are you still a software engineer?
Yeah, I mean, I think as soon as there's a new piece of kind of kit within the Salesforce space, you know, I'll build out a little POC or demo or something that I can just sharpen my tools with. And, you know, whenever there's releases, I'm trying to get up to speed with everything that's coming out. And I remember I worked with somebody a few years back whose guidance was not to ever lose that, because it's one of the things that I think made me better at what I did, even as an architect, was to understand the deeper levels of the development side of things. And I kind of tried to stay close to that and continue to progress that with the, you know, every new release.
Sure. Well, look, thank you so much for sharing your story. I know for a fact a lot of people will take a lot of inspiration from what you've said and what you've achieved. If people want to reach out and pick your brains or ask anything directly, where's the best place to contact you?
LinkedIn. Yeah, Guy Farrah Fisher on LinkedIn's the best place to get in touch.
Cool. Well, look, thank you so much. And I'm very excited to see what else is to come, because I'm sure it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, no, I better get planning for the next thing now that the CTA is over.
Yeah, yeah. And will you make a goal public? Like, is that how you strive towards your goals, by making them known?
Yeah, I think I made the CTA very known from a kind of early point, and in many ways, I think that helped. It applied more pressure through the process, definitely, but it meant that people were aware that that was the career path that I had in mind, and that I was, you know, driven to that as a goal. And people kind of supported me along that process that I think they wouldn't have been able to do if they weren't aware of it.
Sure, sure.
So, yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you again. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday evening, and thank you so much for being a guest.
Cool. No, thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.